Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Eloquently Speaking Radio Network. My name is Stacey Lunsford and I am so excited to greet you this evening from the city of brotherly love. And I have a special guest tonight and his name is Anthony Arnold. He is the winner of the 2015 National Poetry Award, Freedom Poet of the Year. Anthony Arnold is a poet that has always shed light on equality and racism. He uses poetry to make the world understand the plight of Black people. This is a necessary collection of poetry that shows love to the Black community. Some pieces will make you weep with the sorrow of its reality, while others will make you full of pride and triumph. No matter what piece you read, just know that you will be moved with hope and feeling, and a feeling of being seen and heard. We are burying our people in record numbers, and no one seems to have an answer. Not the leaders, not the police, no one. And these are, what I just read to you, are the words of author Anthony Arnold in the title of his book, and the title of this interview is To Live and Die in America. And that's with three Ks, KKK. So at this time, I would like to introduce to some and present to others author Anthony Arnold. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for accepting. And I am so excited. A lot of people are excited. The advertisement for your book and the different pieces that you have been sharing, because you've been sharing your poetry like the past week or so. And a lot of people are interested in what you have to say. And I opened up this interview with the song, infamous song of Harold Melvin in the Blue Notes, Wake Up Everybody. And I thought that was appropriate, Anthony, because your message is a call for us to wake up and not just remember our past, but to remember today and to remember where we are on our way to. So thank you so much for the wake-up call. And I want to give you an opportunity to just greet the audience in your own way and let us know what inspired you to write To Live and Die in America.
First and foremost, hello to everybody that took the time out to join us here today. You could be doing anything else, but you decided to join us for that. I am immensely grateful. Now, To Live and Die in America. This book was a extension, I guess you could call it, of my first three. The very first book that I wrote for Steamy Trails Publishing was My People, Our Trials and Tribulations. I had Urban Musings after that and Random Thoughts. But originally, this book was supposed to have been published in 2016. And as I was getting ready to get it published, I had a little voice in my head, and it said, not now. It's not time. And so I usually listen to my voices when I get them, because they haven't steered me wrong yet. So I shelved it. And I actually participated in something else, did an anthology called Blackmailed by Inner Child Press. And I sat on it, and I was like, when Breonna Taylor was killed and George and some of the other people that we lost during that time, that little voice spoke again. They said, now it's time. So what I did, I refreshed it and added some more pieces to it. And in August of 2020, we brought it out. As a matter of fact, it's been, I think, it was two years on the 12th of August that it came out. And it was, it right time because we still hadn't had anybody charged with Breonna's murder. The stuff was going on with George Floyd. We had not too long ago had Mr. Castillo killed, among others. So it just seemed that it was the right time for it to come out, as opposed to when I originally had decided for it to come out. So that's the background behind the book itself. As for me, I've been doing this now for about 10 years. I grew up down south. Little town I grew up in was called Quincy, Florida. It was 79% black, 21% white, and we ran nothing. To the people back then, they were used to it. But for some reason, it struck a chord with me. I saw the Klan burn a man out in his house. As it came down to, as I got older, being profiled, got profiled in college. Talking about a wake-up call, there's nothing like sitting in your car with your best friends and there's six deputy sheriffs with guns pointed at you because you fit the description. So, a lot of the stuff that I write about, I've experienced at one point in time. That's why as I got older and I'd get called the N-word, I'd just look at them and say, hey, I done been called that by some of the best. You guys don't even fall in the category. But that's me in a nutshell. I just felt that it was a calling for me. And it's something I've always done. And I will continue to do as long as the good Lord gives me breath.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your gift with us. Thank you for sharing your story. Reading through your materials and your poetry, mm-hmm. your passion for what you do, it can be felt. I would like to say that you are also a historian because you capture a lot of our history and you capture it well. And the average person that may not be aware of what's happening, you know, with our people, with all of the topics that you talk about, once they read your work, I don't see how they could walk away untouched because, like I said, your the passion, you feel it. Everything that I've read so far, it has really provoked me to think differently about a lot of things. It has challenged me. And it's indeed a wake-up call. I would like to read the four word in your book, To Live and Die in America. And this is poetry by Anthony Arnold. And for those of you that are listening, Some people are listening via the internet and some are listening on the phone. If you have a question or a comment for Anthony, please press 1 to grace the mic. And if you have a comment, if you're listening on internet, please post your comment and we will definitely respond to you. And we do want you to call in and support our fellow poet. And we want to also give a shout out to Mark Goggins, who is the founder of the New Poetry Black Cafe. And Anthony and I are both members of this poetry group, and that's how I actually met Anthony. But we wanted to give a shout out to the New Black Poetry Cafe. And for the foreword, I ask for your undivided attention, and we're going to ask Anthony to share some of the pieces from his book that he feels led to share with us. But the foreword for his book was written by William S. Peters, the CEO of Inner Child Publishing. And I was very impressed by his words. Mr. Peters said, "Anthony Arnold's voice, as espoused through his poetry, is significant and necessary. In a world that has not yet attained the color blindness that parity, equality, and justice demands, Anthony's poetry and other musings serving as a reminder for us as a humanity to stay awake." We would call Mr. Arnold's writings our voice in the wilderness, as it appears that the social construct which paints our communities as criminal and continues to vilify us because of skin color. We find this voice to be a required element in our personal redemption and guidepost of consciousness. We all thank you, Anthony Arnold, for your vigilance and your continued diligence to be that literary beacon in the midst of the darkness that attempts to overcome us all. And he signed it, "Bless Up." And Anthony, I'm excited to read this and share it with the listeners, because that was a beautiful foreword that he wrote about you. And to say the voice in the wilderness was just awesome. And I want to ask you, how did you feel about that foreword? And then we're going to go into the rest of the interview.
I was actually kind of surprised when he wrote it. I had some dealings with Bill. Some of the anthologies that I wrote for him. He did some stuff for Trayvon, and he actually did the last one that I was involved with, Blackmailed, before this book came out. And I asked him, would he mind doing the foreword for the book? And he said yes. And when I got it, I was like, "You sure you're talking about the right person?" And he just kind of you could see the smile, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm talking about the right person." So I was blessed. I was extremely happy, first of all, that he decided to do it. And what can I say? The man runs a A1 operation, and he's been a friend of mine since I started. And it was a very nice thing to do, because we don't always get the support that we need from our own. We get more support from people that don't know us as opposed to people that we may converse with every day. So
yes,
I was extremely grateful for that.
Wonderful. And the reason I ask that, because you're such a humble man. I love your humility. You've accomplished so much, but you're very humble. And that humility just takes you so far. And the part where it says we find this voice to be a required element in our personal redemption and God post consciousness. That's deep. When I read that, I was like, oh, we putting him up there with, you know, some of the best of the best, Langston Hughes and a whole lot of other people.
And I hear that sometimes, and I'm like, I don't know what y'all smoking, but whatever it is, can I have some? Because like I told him, I am not a classically trained poet. I don't. I wouldn't know an automatopoeia from a haiku, but like I told him when I first got started, I write to the voices that I hear in my head. What I do is, I've always called it a calling. Now, why me? Why not somebody else that's been doing this for years on top of years? I don't know. But it's just something I do. And I'm glad to be able to do it. But sometimes you get that little creep of doubt that crawls in every now and then and say, why me? But
right.
I'll shake it off.
That's true.
I shake it off and I go on about my business and write another two or three poems and keep going.
But, you know, I love what you said. You know, some people go to school to learn how to write and how to be a poet. But when it's a natural gift, you just write what you hear. And I do the same thing. I write what's in my heart. And sometimes you hear the words, and Anthony, it's just, you don't have enough paper. You don't have enough ink in the ink pen. Like, the words just, they be coming. And you got to write, and then it's not always the right time to release it, as you stated. But I listened to one of your pieces called Poetry, and I'm going to ask you to share that with us, because I absolutely loved it. I loved your presentation of it. You were so laid back, so cool. But when did you start writing, and when did you realize that it was something that you was good at?
I wrote my first poem in the third grade. It was for a classmate that had passed away. He had drowned, as a matter of fact. And for some ungodly reason, the teacher asked me what I write. Would I write it? And I did. And it took so much out of me. I did not put pen to paper again until I got to my senior year of high school. We were doing some writing exercises, and the teacher that we had at the time, our English teacher, ended up being our senior class, I won't say president, she was in charge of everything. She said, there's going to be a contest, and whoever wins the contest will have their poem read at graduation in front of everybody. And she walked up to me after she had finished speaking to the class, and she said, you know you're going to put something in, right? I was like, no, I'm not. She said, yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yes, you are, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm like, why? Because if you don't put something in, you're going to summer school. And after about a two-minute silence, I say, give me 5 minutes. I'll have something for you. So I wrote a piece called We Should Not Pass This Way Again, which was our class motto. And, of course, it won. I think I was set up. And a good friend of mine, Terry Sims, who was our senior class president, she read it, and I had to stand up in front of 10,000 people while she did read it. So I was like, no. But I actually didn't start this part of my journey. I didn't start again until 2011. And I started writing again to kind of keep my head in one piece. I had just gotten divorced. And it's funny because you wouldn't think that a person that had gotten divorced wrote a bunch of love poems, but I did. But one day I started, I was reading something and something just clicked. And I fell back into Black history. And I'll write about other things here and there. But since then, that has been my main focus, is writing about our history. Excuse me. Being in the military, you hear about history and stuff, and like they say, the victor writes the history. And our history has been buried for years. And I mean, we have been making history since we were brought over here. From the time we were brought here till the time that we were supposedly, quote, unquote, free with the Emancipation Proclamation, but then all of us wasn't free because all of us didn't get the word. Then we fell into Juneteenth when the rest of us found out. And then you came forward to the to the time our and I'm lost for words here for a minute, but when we came forward to the time past slavery and we were fighting for our civil rights and we marched and we were hung, we were lynched, but we still fought, we still marched, we still kept going. It was like I wrote in a piece of mine that popped up on Facebook the other day, we were like the tribes of Israel. We were allowed to go around it, but we wasn't allowed to walk into the promised land. And it seemed like every time we got somebody to get us on the right track, they were taken away from us. Fred Hampton, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. It seemed like any time there was somebody who could awaken our collective senses, they were taken. So I did my part. I used the available things we had, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, hoping that somebody one day would see it and maybe the light bulb would click.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I invited you, and I'm so grateful that you accepted the invitation. I would like for your poems to be plastered on, like, every billboard in every neighborhood and every community, just so that our younger people today can read and understand what your poem means. And I mean, and I love the pictures that you use to complement your words, but our young people today, the black-on-black crime in our neighborhoods. I had a conversation not too long ago, and matter of fact, it was on one of our one of my Friday night talk shows, and one of the panelists, she told me not to say black-on-black crime because that's not what it is. And I said, well, what is it? I see this every day. Not every day, but I'm experiencing it. And it's really lack of understanding, not knowing who you are, fear, it's a lot of things. But if you had an opportunity, and the sad thing, Anthony, is not just guys, it's not young men, it's the young women today too. Violence, the level of violence is escalating everywhere. I don't know how things are in California where you are. I'm in Philadelphia, but things are pretty rough here. But if you had an opportunity to have a conference room full of young African-American women and men, young and old, what would you say to them to wake them up? And you could take your time to answer that question. And I'm asking you because I know this is part of your voice being that voice in the wilderness. But I believe somebody is going to hear this interview. They're going to hear your words and that their hearts are going to be pricked and they'll be provoked to change, to even think about some of the things that they're doing. And the mic is yours when you're ready.
I think the first thing we need to do is listen. We have to give them a platform to where they can put it out what they think their problems are. And we, as an older generation, we have to listen because that is one thing we don't do very well. I'm 61 years old. I grew up I was born in 1961. The day that I was born was the day that Freedom Rides started. But that still doesn't mean I know everything about, especially this particular generation. Now, that being said, they have to be willing to accept the information that we give them. Because the first thing some of them are going to say, oh, that was then. But then what you fail to realize, like they say, those who fail to realize their history are doomed to repeat it. And if you look, and if you read, and if you listen, some of the same things that happened when I was growing up are happening again now. The only thing I could tell them is listen. If you have questions, ask. Somebody has an answer. It may not be me, Stacy, it may not be you, but somebody has an answer. You have to be willing to talk. You have to be willing to listen. If you can't do either one of those, then why try? And unfortunately, it's that simple. It has always been that simple. We just have never attempted it. And like I say, the times we did attempt it, the people that were leading the conversations were taken away from us. It's not as hard as we make it. We just have to be willing to do it.
True. And that's been, like, we must be willing to do the work has been the topic every day this week with everything. Because people can talk about things. We could complain all day long, but are we willing to do the work? And providing a platform for them is something that I've been trying to do for a while. And people will come to me and we'll have these wonderful conversations and even wonderful discussions, but are we willing to do the work? It's okay to talk about things, but we have to do the work. Malcolm, he did the work. Martin, he did the work. So did everybody else. Harriet Tubman, she did the work. She did extra work. You know, our history is important. Our history has been stolen from us. Our history has been erased out of our books in school. And a lot of people are starting to see the truth, to learn the truth. And we have a lot of young people that are doing wonderful things, positive things, that are graduating high school, graduating college. And, you know, Anthony, we don't hear those stories that often. And I want to hear those stories. I want to celebrate with those parents when their children graduate from college and they go on to be doctors and lawyers or whatever it is they want to be. But I look forward to celebrating those moments with them because we gather together. Now, dig this. We are divided and separated on so many levels, but when one of ours are taken away by a senseless death, isn't it amazing how united we are? But even with that, we don't come together for the right reasons. And then we don't use those opportunities. Well, I can't say we don't, because a lot of positive things have happened. But those moments, we come together. And I truly believe, yes, we need to listen to what they have to say. The Moses generation have to listen and get along with the Joshua generation and have to be willing to accept change. You know, no one likes change. But change is here. It's not that it's coming. Change is here. And we need to, like you said, provide that platform to give them that voice, so that they can be heard. And then together we can, you know, do the work. So thank you so much for sharing that. And would you like to share one of your pieces with us now?
Yeah. This one didn't make the cut for the book, but I think it describes what poetry is. It's a piece called Poetry Is. So, if you don't mind.
The mic is yours.
Poetry is love, hate, sadness, and joy. Poetry is history, revolution, slavery, and redemption. Poetry is Rosewood, Black Wall Street, Watts, and Selma. Poetry is Emmett Till, George Stinney Jr., the Birmingham Four, and Willie James Howard. Poetry is Malcolm X, Dr. King, Rosa Parks, and Medgar Evers. Poetry is us and them. Poetry is you and me. And that's that piece.
And I love it. I love that. I listened to it like 3 times. I really, really love it. I'm like, I'm going to be like one of your biggest fans because, like, I don't know the name of it, but it's after I listened to this one on YouTube, then mm-hmm. it was one. You had like a band playing with you, and it was some serious blues in the background.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I got a couple on there that's like that. It's a program here in LA called SLAM. And they go twice on Friday. They go twice every other Friday here in Los Angeles. And the band that you heard was the house band. So if you want them to accompany you, just give them a hint, and they'll play whatever you want them to do. Shouts out to Lorenzo Frank and the fellas. But, yeah, that's where that one came from.
Okay, okay. Well, I give a shout out to them. Hi, I'm going to be in touch. Because it was just so nice. And, like, you're so laid back. You're so chill. And, I mean, you just say what you need to say. And then at the end you say, and that's this piece. And that's what I do with mine, too. When I'm done, I say, that's this piece. But going back to poetry is love, and mm-hmm. then you said poetry is hate. And I love how you just broke down everything after that. But when you mentioned Emmett Till, that did something to me because his story has resurfaced. They're trying to open his case back up. There's so much happening with the case. And do you have any poems specifically dedicated to Emmett Till or about Emmett Till? I wanted to
actually
ask you.
I do. Give me just 1 second and I'll see if I can find it. But yeah, I actually do have one that I wrote about him.
And Emmett Till, his family, they're trying to get charges, you know, against those that took his life and all of the evidence. Like, it's a lot of new evidence in that whole case. And I just... you know, still praying for justice to prevail while you're looking for your peace. And for those of you that took the time to tune in today, we want to say thank you You are listening to the Eloquently Speaking Radio Network, and our guest speaker today is author Anthony Arnold. And while he is looking for his poem with Emmett Till, I'm going to read his bio. Anthony Arnold is a poet. He is a writer and an avid reader of all genres of literature, with a passion for Black history. As early as the third grade, he composed his very first poem, as we just heard, and that was the beginning of a love affair with poetry, with a keen awareness of Black history as he got older. His hope is that through writing, he'll be able to educate others about the historical significance and challenges that African Americans have faced throughout history, including those events which are rarely discussed or taught in public schools, including the African American role in the Civil War. Through poetic expression, his desire is to share knowledge with the younger generation, to learn more about their ancestors and culture while letting them know that they are much more than what some in society label them. And Anthony Arnold, author Anthony Arnold, can be reached on Facebook. He has a page on Facebook, and the name of that page is Anthony Arnold, The Tiger's Den. So just type in Anthony Arnold - The Tiger's Den, and you will get access to his page. And I ask that you support the work that he's doing. Please like, please share. And for those of you that work with young people, those of you that have a poetry group in your schools, spoken word, anything dealing with literature, poetry, spoken word, rap, any platform that you feel as though Anthony can be of assistance to you, I'm going to ask him to give his contact information. Please feel free to reach out to him for speaking engagements. And for those of you that would like to invite him for a book signing for his books, he is the publisher of more than one book, and he gave the names of those books earlier, but I'm going to repeat those books. And the topic of discussion today is his book of poetry, To Live and Die in America. But he is also the author of Random Thoughts, My People, Our Trials and Tribulations, and Urban Musings. So if anything said today has touched your heart, or if you want to receive more information, at this time I'm going to ask Anthony to give his contact information, and then he will be sharing another poem with us. The mic is yours, Anthony.
If you need to get a hold of me, my email address is authoranthonyarnold, all one word, @yahoo.com. That's the best way to get a hold of me, because sometimes at work my phone will not, depending on where I am at the job, I don't get any service. So if you have any questions or anything you want to ask, like I said, authoranthonyarnold @yahoo.com. And I found that piece.
Okay. And before you go to your piece, how can they purchase the various copies, different books that you have published? Are they all on Amazon?
All of them are on Amazon.
Okay. Thank you.
All on Amazon. Just type in the title of the book, and it'll take you to it.
Wonderful. And when you're ready, you can share your piece.
Okay. the piece was written in a as if Emmett himself was speaking. So it was done from his point of view. Title of the piece is called "My Name is Emmett." My name is Emmett Till, and I am dead. I was 14 years old when I died in Mississippi. What was my crime? They say I whistled at a woman, a white woman. I was beaten and shot and thrown into a river. Even though what I did might have been wrong, I didn't deserve to die, did I? They say I helped start the civil rights movement. I don't know about that. I was just a kid. Medgar Evers and Moore will come to find out my story. 8 years later, he would meet the same fate in the driveway of his home. Why was I killed? No one really knows. For honor, maybe? That seems to be the thought to remind us of our place. Didn't remind us of our place. We rose up to take our place in the sun. Martin, Malcolm, and the Panthers, they all fought for our freedom. I have a dream by any means necessary. And black power, these were our cries. But it took the murder of a 14-year-old child from Chicago, Illinois, to bring it to the front. My name is Emmett Till, and I died. Emmett Till was murdered August 28th of 1955. Let us not forget him and the others who died in the struggle. And that's that piece.
Amen. I love it. Thank you so much. You know, his story, it just continues. He has had a great impact on our history, clear up to today, as his family continues to fight for justice. I remember when the lady that falsely accused him, when she told the truth, Anthony, she was 82 years old. And she couldn't hold it anymore. And so, I don't know how you felt or anybody else felt, but when she told the truth, it did something to me. Because she humbled herself. She could have died. She could have went to her grave with that truth, but she chose to speak the truth. And there are a lot of truths that need to be revealed where people need to speak up. But that day when she spoke her truth, I was angry because she could have told the truth back then and he could still be here. But unfortunately, you know, he's not here. But your poem, all of the other poems, and all of the wonderful things that has taken place, it's like he was the sacrifice for a lot of people, for a lot of things. But thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. You know, they say things happen in their own time. It wouldn't have made a difference if she had told the truth back during that time. He would have still been killed.
Yes.
The impetus for Rosewood. The guy that ended up being hanged the woman that was supposedly raped told them, you got the wrong guy. But it didn't matter. He was still hung. Unfortunately, in certain cases, when you get to a certain point, it's going to continue regardless.
Yes.
If it's meant to be that way or not meant to be that way, it's going to happen. And some things are just written that way. They have to happen in order for things to come out.
Yes.
That's why I always tell people, before you believe anything, do your research. Because just because you hear something does not make it right, does not make it real.
Right.
I've been questioned a few times about some of the stuff that I put in my pieces. I say, I don't write anything without doing the research, without doing the legwork. And if you want to challenge it, go look. Everything I write can be found in the libraries, on Google, on the net. I will not write anything, especially with our history. I will not write anything that has not been researched.
And really, that's the work of a good writer. You have to do your research. You could get into too much trouble writing things that's not true. And people are just waiting to, you know, get a case or to take someone to court. But from what I've read so far, you have been very thorough with your poetry. Your message is very tight, and you do you share a lot of history, and you you mentioned you do a lot of stuff about Wall Street too, Black Wall Street, which, you know,
yes,
a lot of people don't even know about Black Wall Street. I mean, a lot of us don't know about a lot of things, but I was shocked to learn about Black Wall Street. And you have a piece. Go ahead.
What I was going to say about that one was, I found out about Black Wall Street looking for something else. And it just so happens that my wife is from Tulsa. She's the cousin of the Gap Man. And she was going up there, and she called me. She was up seeing her dad, and she called me. She said, there is a guy here who is a local historian. His name is Lee Alford. And he was a local historian for Black Wall Street. And he said, if you wanted to call him, here's his number. So I called him, and we stayed on the phone, oh, Lord, for about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
And I asked every question I could think of about Black Wall Street. And what I ended up doing, I wrote a short story called Black Wall Street, a fictional account. The reason I put the fictional account on the end of that was the majority of that piece was stuff I fabricated to go around the original things that happened. And it had to do with a guy who moved from back east. he had gotten his heart broken, and he moved. And at the time, the gentleman that was selling the pieces of land there in Tulsa, he ended up buying a store, and he met a local girl, and went from there. And then while I did that, I also wove in the things that happened that started Black Wall Street. So it ended up being one of my better pieces. Like I said, it was a short story. It was kind of long, but that was one of the best pieces, other than the stuff that I wrote on Tuskegee. That was one of the better things that I think, in my opinion, that I've ever written.
And it's very interesting. And for those of you that are listening, I encourage you to purchase the book, To Live and Die in America. And that particular story, Black Wall Street, A Fictional Account by Anthony Arnold, it is on page 19. And I think it's about 3 or 4 pages. So
I got the book right here in my grubby little hands.
1, 2, 3, 4. No, it's 5 pages.
Yeah, that's why I said that one really didn't count as a poem. That was a short story.
I wanted
to make sure that I included everything, because you know sometimes when you write a poem, you cut here or you kind of shortchange things every now and then, just so you don't make it too long. But in this case, I wanted to make sure I put everything in there that we talked about. And it's funny with it, because even today, there is a discrepancy about how many people were actually killed. Because the quote-unquote official death toll is somewhere in close to 30. But if you talk to him and I researched some other stuff, they're saying that there may have been upwards to 300 people that were killed. Why would you take a flatbed truck to put bodies on if you only had 30 people that were killed?
Right.
Why would you have multiple grave sites that were not marked if you only had 30 people killed? So there's a thing going on in Tulsa right now where they're going and trying to locate these mass graves that were not marked. If I remember correctly, they found one here maybe about a month ago, I think. But they're thinking there's maybe about 3 or 4 more. So they're in the process of trying to find those graves. And all this was spurred by 3 survivors, the oldest being 109. And a judge has ruled that they can go forward with their lawsuit for reparations. So I'm very interested to see how that pans out.
Yes, me too. That's a big to-do. So thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to, you know, follow that and keep me updated as well. So, Anthony, on this journey you've been on, do you have any upcoming speaking engagements, or where do you, what's the location where you do your spoken word? Like, what, is there a particular night that you're there, or is it just random?
If I haven't done anything now pretty much since the pandemic started. I've been
okay.
I've been pretty much shut down. Usually, there's a place here in Riverside, California that I'll do some stuff, or I'll go to SWAM in LA. Usually if I perform anything, I'll usually go there. But like I say, with the pandemic, and I'm one of those people that has a messed up immune system, I haven't done too much of anything. So mostly with me now, I'm on Facebook. So I usually put out maybe, it depends on my mood. I may put out one poem a week. I may put out two or three a week. Sometimes I put out one per day. It's just the mood that I'm in at the time.
Yeah, well, I hadn't been to Black Poetry Cafe for a while because I just finished with my finals. But I was there today, mm-hmm. and I said, wow, I have a lot of reading to catch up on because you posted a lot of new poems. But, I mean, everyone, it's some good stuff in there. So later on tonight I'm going to go in and just catch up on my reading. But that's where I met you at. So how did you end up being at the new Poetry Black Cafe, and how do you like the cafe? And then I'm going to chime in on that too.
I was in the original cafe before he shut it down.
Okay. Mhm.
And I remember we were all going to get together and we were going to do the thing in Vegas, and then of course pandemic hit. So that went the way of the wind. So I remember when Mark said he was going to shut the cafe down. And there were a lot of people that were upset about it, but they understood why. So fast forward, and I get an invitation to join the new one. And I was like, it's coming back?
Right.
And I was like, oh, my goodness. And I was in some of the first groups of people that got invited back. So I was like, whoa, this is nice. So
finish what you were saying.
All I was going to say was I try and make time to go through there and read the different things. I took part in the reparations challenge that's going on in there right now. So I like it because it keeps – if you're a poet, the worst thing you can have happen to be not active. Because there's some people that write, and they write, and they write, and they write, and they write. Then there are others who may write once a month, once a week. I have to stay active, because if I don't, it drives me nuts. It's just one of those things where, okay, I'll write something just to keep my mind occupied. And if you look at my stuff, I may say just something I wrote just to keep my mind occupied. And I've written some weird stuff. I look at them as exercises. I truly look at them as exercises. I wrote one time. I think I had the flu or something, and I wrote a piece, and people were like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." I think this is what comes out when you're sick. So I'll
you know
do
what?
Stuff just to keep my mind occupied.
Okay, and that's a good thing. But you know what? Sometimes people are not going to get it. People are not going to always understand the things that we pen. They're just not going to get it. But you still share it because it's your gift. And so, but somebody may get it. You know, it may make somebody smile. It may bring them out of the dumps if they was down and out that day. Like, keep writing no matter what.
Yeah, I'll write things at a time just for gee whizzes. I'll take song titles and write poems around them. Some of them that are actually pretty good, and some of them I'll read later and go, "What in the blue blazes was I thinking?" But it's
fun. When you write your poetry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
When you write your poems, do you read them out loud to yourself afterwards, or do you just read it and you're done?
I'll read them on occasion.
Okay.
I'll read them because sometimes I'll make changes to them, because what sounds good to you in the beginning don't make no sense to you later. So
yes, that's true.
It depends.
Okay. Well, the reason I asked you about the new Black Poetry Cafe, because
mm-hmm.
that's where I met you, and I was a part of the original Black Poetry Cafe, and I kind of fell off a little bit before everything was shut down, and I was just so humbled to, you know, receive the invitation, because it's at the cafe that I actually blossomed with my poetry, because I always, like yourself, I've been writing poetry for a very long time, and, you know, started in elementary school. And I wasn't confident enough, like, to share my pieces. But when I started sharing them, I was getting a lot of positive feedback. And I don't know who the person was at the Black Poetry Cafe, but first they used to call me the church lady, but then they started calling me, somebody said I was the pastor of poetry. So that's, if you see me sign my poems, I'd be like, "Eloquently speaking, the pastor of poetry." Well, that was birthed out of the Black Poetry Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't writing for a while, Anthony. I mean, I was writing, but I really wasn't writing poetry. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
when I asked you the question, I literally saw your smile. Like, you lit up when I asked you about the cafe, because you was like, "Oh, yes, it's back." And I felt the same way. And ever since I've been back, I've been writing poetry every day. I just haven't been posting in the group every day. And, listening to you, and you say, like, you try and post something all of the time. But I'm going to share some of the pieces that I have not posted yet. And I'm graduating, I'm maturing as a poet, as a writer, and tapping into different genres and stuff. So, you know, I'm just excited. It's a new place. It's a new thing. Some of the old writers and some of the new writers are coming, but Mark and his team, they're doing a wonderful job. And I'm just glad to connect with you, you know, this time. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your work with me and the listeners today. And I want to give you an opportunity to provide your contact information again. And any closing remarks you want to share with our radio listeners? And a big thing is if you want to give a shout out to anyone that has supported you through your career as a writer, as an author, as a poet, anyone you want to say thank you to.
Funny you mentioned that, because I wrote a thing this morning about my publisher, who I have been with for 10 years. I was their first author.
Wow.
The first author that was attached to the publishing group, and I've been with them ever since. Steamy Trails Publishing is the name of the group. It's run by Katrina Gurl, spelled G-U-R-L. She is like the sister I never had. We've been through some of everything, and I can truly say, if it wasn't for her, there would be no me. And that is the God honest truth. Another shout out I got to give to Terrence McKnight, and he was the, and still is, the CEO of Poetry in Motion, one of the groups there on Facebook. That was the very first poetry group that I was involved with. And I am still a member of that group to this day.
Okay.
Flor Lisa White was one of the first people I ever did an anthology for. I was in her poetry group also at the time. William S. Peters. I think I've been in five different anthologies. No, I take that back. Seven different anthologies. I've been in 19 total, but the majority of them have come from Inner Child Press. You read the foreword that he did for my book. I am immensely grateful to that man when he did the first anthology. When he did his anthology for Trayvon Martin, there were some heavy hitters in that book. And I think I submitted like six pieces for that book, thinking, well, out of the six, he'll pick at least one. He put all six in there. I'm like, you don't know me from Adam. And he's like, no, but your work is good. And that's what I'm concerned with. So he was never one, in my opinion, just because you had a name and you were supposedly the quote unquote greatest poet alive or whatever. He looked at the quality of your work. So, let's see, anybody else? To anybody that has ever let me grace their anthologies or whatever with my work, I say thank you. I say thank you because a lot of people didn't know me from Adam. but you took a chance. And for that, I thank you. Stacy, I thank you for the time, for letting an old man flap his gums. And it was greatly appreciated. And if you ever need me to do anything again, please don't hesitate to reach out. You know how to get in touch with me now. So,
you know, I am.
You
know,
thank you.
Let me let you finish.
No, I will shut up now. I'm done.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. You know, every time someone comes on, I always give them the opportunity to give a shout out and say thank you, because we would not be where we are today without the help of other people, and we need to pay it forward. So God bless you for all of the people that you just loved on, and I certainly will reach out to you. I'm working on a couple of projects. I do a lot of missions work, but I also do prison ministry, and I'm trying to get approval to go into the prisons and start like a poetry program. But, you know, I'll reach out to you about that off the air. But I will definitely be in touch with you for some of the things we talked about and providing those platforms so that we can listen and actually do something. Because, Anthony, through the years, people talking the talk, and, you know, some people are doing things, but we need to do things on a bigger level, and we need to reach out to our younger people to help make a difference. So I love what you said about that. And I would like permission to read your poem. This is one of my, it's so many favorite ones in your book. And the book I'm reading from is To Live and Die in America by Anthony Arnold. So I would like to read Living for the City, if that's okay.
Go for it.
And for those of you that are listening, this poem was inspired by the song from Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions. A little boy out on the streets, doing the best he can to survive, selling whatever he can, even himself. Living for the city, standing on the corner, tears in her eyes, turned out by a man she thought she knew, someone she thought she could trust. Her uncle needs his money, living for the city. She's trying to figure how to tell him she didn't mean to cheat. No, the onus is on her, pregnant from a one-night stand, living for the city. He sits with the gun in his hand, life ruined, no other choice. He can't hide his addiction anymore. Everything is gone. Living for the city. Gunned down in the street. Another life gone. Another cop freed. The future reduced. Living for the city. Trayvon murdered. Walter executed. Sandra lynched. Who's next? No, living for the city. Thank you, Anthony. That poem really touched my heart, and it really complements Stevie Wonder's song. And these are some of the things that are prevalent to today's society. And we have real people with real problems that are looking for real solutions. And so I thank you on behalf of the Eloquently Speaking Radio Network. We thank you for gracing the mic and sharing your story today. And I want to ask you to just give your contact information one more time for those that want to get in contact with you. Let the listeners know where they can purchase your books. And then we're going to bring the interview to an end.
Okay.
Oh, and provide like your YouTube channel. Your YouTube channel.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay, okay.
It's your light to shine. So whatever it is that's going to help you shine, this is the platform. Shine your shine.
Once again, my email address is Author Anthony Arnold, all one word, at yahoo.com. Look right quick. Like she says, I'm on YouTube, and to find me, my just type. Once you go to YouTube, just type in Anthony Arnold, and you will see a picture of me holding To Live and Die in America. And that's my channel. I have a blog that is called musingsofanthonyarnold.wordpress.com. And my author page is steamgirlspublishing.com/authoranthonyarnold. Stacy, if you don't mind, to close this out, would you mind if I read the title poem from the book?
Yes. Please do.
This is...
Look, you can read to me all night long. I mean, I just, your poems are so good and they're so touching. But yes, you go forward and you read that poem. And then when you're done, you can, because we still have some, let me see how much time we have. Yeah. We're good with the time. Go ahead. Read your poem.
Okay. This is To Live and Die in America. To live and die 400 years in the making, lynched and beaten, if you're lucky. Slain as an example, Nick, don't you run. You don't leave here except a box. Strange fruits, he said, hanging from the poplar tree. Men and women swing in the breeze. You eyeballing that white woman? No, sir, I swear. Too late, boy. Never to be seen again. Mesopotamia, oil, Black Wall Street, Rosewood. Our people at their best, reduced to signs and plaques. I have a dream by any means necessary. One starts to live by, to live up to. Do they even mean anything to anyone now? Antiquated sayings, just used to feel important. Brothers and sisters murdered by those supposed to protect. Yet we do the man's job for him every day in every city. Violated, persecuted, driving, walking, even laughing. See, to some, our existence is a question. To others, Black lives don't matter. Men, women, children, dying. The bullseye has been raised. What do we say? what do we do? To live and die in America. And that's that peace.
And I'm snapping, I'm giving you some snaps. That's a powerful piece. And the signature poem for this book. And a question I forgot to ask you. Because you chose to spell America, AmeriKKA, did you receive any backlash or any persecution because of the title of your book?
None.
Why?
Not a single solitary bit.
And the way you got excited just now, I know you was ready if you did.
Oh, yeah. Because I had written a piece. I have a piece in the book. As a matter of fact, it's the very first piece. When I originally wrote it with two Ks. And somebody gave me some feedback and said it should be three. And I was like, I looked at it and I thought about it and I was like, and three Ks it is. And ever since then, if there's America in the title, it's done with three Ks. Because if you think about it, as long as the KKK has been in existence in America, with all the stuff that we know they did, they have never been outlawed. They refused to put them on the domestic terrorism list. There are cops to this day who are members of the Klan. There are politicians who are members of the Klan. There are entire families who are members of the Klan, including their children. And you're right, I was ready. I would go come out with both barrels blazing.
I know that's
right. If you don't want them to represent America, then do something about it. Because right now, that's what they do.
And, you know, they've been doing it. Go ahead.
What I was going to say, there were people in the military when I was in that were members of the Klan, that were members of the Aryan Nation.
And how was that? Did you have any experiences, any altercations with them?
No. Because for the simple reason being, even though you were a member, you still had to abide by the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which means you end up in a federal prison somewhere. And that is the one thing I will say about being in the military. You screw up, you pay the price. Sometimes, justified or not.
I mean, that's a whole nother level of racism and discrimination.
Yes.
And cover-ups.
It still goes on to this day. They had the Army guys in, I think it was either North or South Carolina, that were involved in some racist stuff. They had some stuff that went on in Texas where some of the soldiers got involved with racist stuff. They're trying to weed them, but that's a whole, like I say, that's a whole different animal. That is a whole different animal.
Yes, and but along the lines of the military, there is a Calvin Patterson. I just interviewed him maybe 2 weeks ago, and we are
in the process of building various shows for veterans, which I mentioned to you, but you're more than welcome to join the panel when we go forth with that, because there's just so much information that's available to our vets, and a lot of them don't know, and a lot of family members, especially the spouses, if the husband or the wife is deceased, there's so many benefits that are available to them. And I really want to make a difference in that area. So if you would like to join us with that project, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, please keep me informed on that one. And I work at the Veterans Hospital, so any information that I can get from them that I can share with you guys, I'd be more than happy to.
Okay. Thank you so much. And anything I can do to help you moving forward, don't hesitate to call on me either. The platform is here. It's called Network because I want to network with people and help make a difference in our communities and especially with our people. So having said that, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I've enjoyed our time together. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we go?
No. I'm good, but thank you for the platform. Thank you for the opportunity. It was a blast.
Oh, thank you, and I'm so happy. I'm excited. It was very nice. And I just want to add, for those of you that are going to purchase the book, To Live and Die in America, the signature poem is in the back of the book on page 113. And then the poem America, AmericKKA, is on page 4. And even if you take the time to purchase the book, please reach out to Anthony and let him know how the book has impacted your life, any of the books that he has purchased. But if you would take the time, if you purchase the book on Amazon and you go to the reviews and write a review on any of his books, but specifically To Live and Die in America, that will help him so much. So we thank you in advance. And we thank everyone for joining us. You're listening to the Eloquently Speaking Radio Network. My name is Stacey Lunsford, and our special guest today was Arthur Anthony Arnold. And our commercial, our sponsor today, is none other than the new Black Poetry Cafe. And we want to both give a shout-out to Mark Goggins. And we want to say good night to everyone. Stay safe and one love. Good night, Arnold. Anthony.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.